Even the most casual sports fan knows that pre- and post-game press conferences are just as much a part of the spectacle of sports as the game itself, which is why tennis star Naomi Osaka's decision earlier this week to skip a post-game conference after the French Open and later drop out of the contest has sparked two major conversations about the role and relevance of the press conference and the importance of prioritizing mental health. We're joined now to talk about all of this for our sports roundtable with Amira Rose Davis, a professor at Penn State University whose work focuses on the role of race and gender in sports, and Mike Florio, a sports commentator who writes for Pro Football Talk on NBCSports.com. Welcome to you both.
Hello, great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, historically, the purpose of the presser in sports is to grow the league and gain fans and sponsors. And Mike, you recently wrote that you used to think that speaking to reporters was actually a small price to pay for getting paid so much money to play the sport. But your views have changed, especially because we have social media now. Can you say more?
There are so many ways that players can communicate with fans and provide access to fans. And for decades, the sports reporter was the conduit between player and fan. And back in the days when the NFL wasn't nearly as popular as it is now, there was a greater urgency to entice reporters to pay attention, to listen, to write and talk about the National Football League. That's just not the case anymore. And when it comes to the mandatory post-game press conference, I think that it's reasonable to at least raise the question, given today's climate, given the different ways that access can be had. Is there a balance to be struck between forcing players to speak when maybe they don't want to and preserving and protecting and respecting their mental health?
Well, let's bring in Amira Rose. You've actually also been interrogating this idea of reporter access. It's an interesting idea to take on because if the reason for pressers is economics versus gaining information, has the role of the press conference outlived its function? What do you think could be the alternative?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really fruitful question and one that we've seen. But I also think there's a little bit of a disparity in who's having these conversations. As somebody who's sports media adjacent, of course, I host a sports podcast. You know, I found that the conversation is really about, like, what do sporting futures look like? And sometimes we're so ingrained with how it's been that it's hard to imagine new ideas or new ways of doing things. And I think that this is one area, to Mike's point, where we've seen social media, we've seen things like the Players Tribune, where athletes are writing their own, penning their own kind of commentary or pieces. We've seen podcasts. We've seen, you know, a variety of ways that the way of the landscape of sports media has shifted. And I think that it's really great to have an opportunity to say, is there a way that we can actually think about what narratives we tell around sports or who's doing the storytelling and what is the function of that? And if it's not about economics, is there something else we can pair it with?
You also study the role of race and gender in sports. We've seen many other sports figures protest in their own way. The press conference, Marshawn Lynch, for example, answering every question with, "I'm just here so I won't get fined." Put this into context for us. This is an extra layer of complexity in this conversation. Osaka is a woman. She's also Asian and Black.
One of the things that's very clear is that there's a disparity, and there has long been a disparity, between the demographics of many of the athletes being covered, especially when you're talking about, obviously, the NFL, when you're talking about the way that Serena and Venus Williams have been covered, what it means for Naomi Osaka to be covered by a tennis, you know, media that is overwhelmingly older and white and male. And I think that these differences are also part of the puzzle, right? Because there has been the same conversations within sports media of how do we get those newsrooms to reflect not only the demographics of the athletes and the sports being covered, but just a wider variety of voices in there. And I think sometimes that particular, you know, feature of it is what has made the disconnect or the hostility between the athlete and the reporter that much more palpable, because it feels like you're just an entertainer. You're there and all these people have microphones in your face and you don't see yourself reflected in the questions or in the framing or in who's doing the reporting. And I think that that has been something that many athletes have articulated and picked on about that adds to their, you know, hesitancy or discomfort.
Mike, you write that reporters who cover the NFL have actually in recent years become more sensitive to the mental health of players. But there's a caveat here that the sensitivity to mental health is only applicable if it doesn't threaten media access. What balance needs to be struck here?
There needs to be a balance. And before we can strike the balance, we need to have reporters who are willing to potentially alter in some way their own access. And I feel like many reporters don't even want to have that conversation. I have had some react to me negatively, some in hostile fashion over the—
What have they said to you?
Well, just the idea that anything that limits the ability of the reporters to cover the sport is a negative, is in some way an impairment on that job that reporters fill as the conduit between the fans and the people who play the games. And I understand that. Look, no one wants to have their ox gored. No one wants to have their job become more difficult than it is. And I'm not suggesting that locker room access should be eliminated. All I've suggested is, why don't we make this currently mandatory practice of showing up for press conferences and speaking, why don't we make that voluntary? And frankly, it isn't mandatory to speak. You can say, I'm just here so I don't get fined, over and over again. You can give non-responsive answers if you're an NFL player. You don't have to say things that respond to the questions. You just have to show up. That's one of the things about it that bothers me. There's just this knee-jerk, thou shalt show up, with no expectation that anybody's actually going to say anything. You just have to show up.
And to be clear, like, this idea that, like, we need to do better at taking mental health seriously goes beyond sports. As a society, we've started to talk about caring about mental health, but the rhetoric hasn't necessarily caught up with what it looks like to actually build that into our structure of society. And especially in a field like sports landscape, where we're really tied to narratives, we've seen over and over again where we have no problem talking about mental health or talking about mental toughness or talking about these things. When Brett Favre has a tremendous game after his dad passes away, Carl Anthony Towns, right? How many close-ups of him crying or being consoled with a graphic about how many family members he lost to COVID did we see over the last year? We were talking and well aware of the mental anguish that was there, but it becomes a narrative. And I think that there's a way in which we stop and we talk stories and we tell stories about the strength of that and never stop to ask why we require that strength in the first place. And so I think that we're at actually this moment where I obviously study sports because I find a lot of power in them. And part of your answer to your earlier question of what might the future look like, I'm like, what would it look like for sports to really take a leadership role in saying, actually, this is what it looks like to not only talk about mental health, but to take it seriously. And if that means we say, hey, having a mandated presser where you might be at the lowest of lows and right after have to try to explain it in something that we all know is not necessarily useful, what are other possibilities that we can still think about access and telling those stories that don't involve them doing it in a way that might seem harmful to an athlete?
You know, Amira Rose, your point about what this larger message about mental health, we're seeing so much outpour from this. There was this note from actor Will Smith to Naomi Osaka saying they were wrong. It's now gone viral. Others have also weighed in. Calm, this meditation app, is now offering to pay fines for players who decline media. Where do you think this moment is taking us? I know both of you have laid out what should happen, but what do you think will actually happen in the days and weeks ahead? Because this conversation is happening pretty rapidly.
The speed in which it's happening, I mean, I think that there's always the possibility that within a week, the status quo rolls on again. I mean, it's durable for a reason. But I do think that we are seeing it's leaving the sports world. And anytime that happens, I think that there are really good opportunities to build forward.
There's the attitude among fans that you should just be grateful you have this job, and you should be grateful and you should just do what you're told. And I hope that's going to finally start to turn, and that the athletes will feel that they have power, they have support. To the extent that players feel support from media and fans, they'll be more inclined to start to take some power back.
Professor Amira Rose Davis, author of the forthcoming book, Can't Eat a Medal, The Lives and Labors of Black Women Athletes in the Age of Jim Crow, and sports commentator for NBCSports.com, Mike Florio. Thank you both for this conversation.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.